Welcome to the Explore Words, Discover Worlds podcast from Bradford Literature Festival. In this episode, culinary storyteller and author Radhika Howarth invites us to reconnect with a more instinctive, meaningful way of eating, one rooted in care, culture and memory. Recorded live at the 2025 festival as part of our Big Tasty Read collaboration with the Reading Agency and delivered as part of Bradford 2025 UK City of Culture, Howarth explores the intuitive food wisdom passed down through generations and what it still has to teach us today.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to our conversation today. You think it's going to be me talking? No. It's a conversation. It's about me sharing my thoughts, and I'd love to hear what you think about all the things that we are going to be talking about. My name is Radhika, Radical Radhika. It's Radhika Howarth. I'm a cook. My background is in food and nutrition. I am originally from India, but I have been in the UK after talking to you ladies, for about 33 years. I think I've stopped counting after 30 years. I live in London and I am a cook. I started as a content creator on Instagram. So that's the Radical Kitchen. Was very fortunate to get two TV shows. So I have a show on Amazon Prime called The World Cook. And then last year it was on Channel 4 with Sue Perkins, who was amazing, called Double the Money. And I published my cookbook in October last year. And thanks to Flavors Without Borders, I'm here with you today. So I want to first start by thanking, I know it should be in the reverse order, but gratitude for me, you know, I'm here because the organizers have invited me. And I'm here to talk about wisdom, grandmother's wisdom, what that means, the legacy. But I want to start with my own story. I want to talk about Varda, my grandmother, and what I have learned from her. I was born in Calcutta and grew up in a place called Gwalior. And my mother has been a single parent. So my mother and grandmother's influence has been very, very strong. And I'm telling this story because hopefully somewhere in some of the things that I say, you will be able to make the connections about what we learn, sometimes consciously and sometimes even without knowing. Because what they have done has shaped whether grandmothers, grandparents and mothers have shaped who we are today. So this is thanks to my Nani. Nani is my, in India, we call mother's maternal grandmother, Varda. So Flavors Without, and I'm going to connect the two, and because there is a connection. And I was just giving an interview outside where they said, what inspired you to write this book? So Flavors Without Borders is a book where I've looked at how different historical trade routes, like the Silk Route or the Spice Route, the colonial pathways, have shaped the food and flavors. So it's one ingredient, three recipes from three different countries, but there's a story. It's not just three random recipes that I like. I like them all, but there's a story that connects them. What has been the give and take? What have we learned and what have we contributed? You know, so whether we are looking at the samosas on the Silk Route or the story of the curry powder. So what's the inspiration? Why so many different recipes? So coming back to my, and the inspiration comes because this is an extension of my own heritage. Coming back to my Nani and my mother, my mom, so I'm half Punjabi, which is North India. I'm quarter Bengali, which is Calcutta, West Bengal. And I'm quarter Mangalorean, which is Southwest coastal India. That's where my flavor curiosity starts. Because my food at home was never one cuisine. Then my mother, there were six sisters. Each sister married, and this I'm talking in late 50s, 60s in India, in a different culture, different faith. My one Masi, my mother's sister, married a Hyderabadi Muslim. She lives in London and she went on to become a television producer, actress, etc. Lalita Ahmed, Bhaji on the Beach lady. Right? One Masi married a Kashmiri. One Masi married a Sikh. One Masi married a Tamilian. My mama married an Armenian. So can you see where it's all coming? I was exposed. I grew up with so many different cultures, food and flavors that I almost took it for granted. Now, my nani, my grandmother, was really ahead of her times. And I think all our grandmothers did, because what they did, very naturally, we are paying a lot of money to do it now. Sustainability, right? This is the new buzzword. Well, I won't say buzzword, it's really important. But sustainability. What is sustainability, right? So how did my nani or your nani, what did they do about sustainability? So I was reading a definition of what is sustainable. So I thought I would read it out to you, or read it, make sure that I've got it right. Eat local, right? Am I right? Eat local, eat seasonal, right? Do not waste. What else? Support local farmers, right? Don't waste. Basic. What did our grandparents do? Eating seasonal, right? And so nani, we would only eat in the summer vegetables with water, cooling. In the winter, we had winter vegetables. And I'm just going to ask you, because I talk coming from my culture, it's a very mixed culture, but I want to hear different perspectives. Was it the same? Did you eat seasonal here? Yes?
Yes, I was definitely brought up like that. You only ate certain things at certain times of the year.
So that's the way we were brought up.
And it was local food as well. Yeah, it was grown locally. Yeah.
So that was sustainability.
Yes. Yeah.
We eat seasonal, which is good for the health. When I came to this country 30 years back, I saw cauliflowers in the summer. And like, I've always eaten cauliflower in the winter in India. I first couldn't understand. Honestly, I mean, and I've studied food and nutrition. I don't know whether I've done my master's in food and nutrition. Then cold storage, cold freezer. And then I used to call my mother. She said, no, don't eat. I said, but mommy, it's cold here. So maybe I can eat cauliflower. You know, all those conversations going on. But going back to nani. So nani is my granny. Sustainability was all about eating local and not wasting anything. So talking of cauliflower, we would use the florets to make the sabji, curry, bake, whatever you did. And then use the leaf as well to prepare. And my grandmother did it. Do I do it now? Sadly, no. And I think that's where are we losing the wisdom and why? Yeah. And then it was all about local produce, supporting the farmers. You know, this we only bought fresh food or what we needed. Okay, here we do it for the week. My mother still buys on a daily basis. And I'm just going to open that. How do you shop for your vegetables? For the week? Yeah, it's convenience. I think we have to balance that. But I think going back to what we did, there was a logic, a rationale, but it came very naturally. So when you have consultants talking about sustainability, I just say, let's just look at what our grandparents did. Because that was the wisdom they had. And that's the legacy that we need to continue. And it's very easy and simple and doable. Our grandparents respected nature and they respected food. And sadly, what we are doing is we are losing that respect for nature and food. And we pay a lot to be reminded to do it. Yeah. So sustainability. Okay, the other thing that we did, small families or large families, my nani used to say, sorry, you wanted to make a comment, sorry.
Yes, there were two things I was going to say. First of all, cauliflower, you do realise that there is a winter cauliflower and a summer cauliflower, and they are different. But the other thing I was going to say is that I grew up on a farm, so we only could eat seasonally because that was what was available and that's what was growing. And yeah.
So in India, we didn't have a summer cauliflower.
Ah, right.
In India, the vegetables, the summer vegetables have a lot of water. So we have lauki, the bottle gourd. I'm just trying to think, even the fruits are different. It's because it's very hot. So it's different vegetables. Hence. So it's really interesting to hear that there's a summer cauliflower too. Yes. So, and the farm, and you eat locally and you don't waste anything. And our grandmothers used to conserve.
But that's what I was going to say, is I still do that. This morning, I walked down my garden and picked the manchot and the pak choi.
Can you hold the microphone?
For my tea for my dinner this evening, yes.
Yeah,
yes.
And I'm so glad to hear that, because I think that's what we all need to be doing. And that's what we all need to be talking about more, to make it more, how do I say, normal, more doable and more acceptable. Because I think the theme for today is that we don't need to be reinventing things. We just need to reflect, remember, and continue doing what was done and adapt it to the way our life is today, right? Thank you for that. Is there anything else?
No.
Thank you for that. That was really very, very interesting. The other thing is about my mom and my grandmother. Okay, we were three. My mother has been a single parent, small family. My granny, my nani used to come and spend a lot of time with us. Just a few things about my nani. Her name is Varda. Varda, her name, Varda means blessing. Varda is the one who also gives. Nani spoke 8 languages in her time, and she was self-taught. Nani loved cooking different cuisines from different cultures. She loved baking. We didn't have an oven. You know, she used to kind of make those home ovens and all that to bake. And Nani later on, when she was in her 70s, loved Julio Iglesias, right? And she picked up some Spanish words, cucaracha. Who would know that many years later, I would marry a half Spanish and half German, thanks to Julio Iglesias. So, but what that did for me and my sister and my cousins is made us very curious about languages and culture. It was always about, oh, what is this? Let's find out. Not, oh, what is this? Oh, we are better or we are different. Differences are there, but differences are to be spark that curiosity to learn. So I have to thank my nani for making me curious about other cultures, other cuisines, and made me adventure. So I call myself a flavor enthusiast. I want to try, learn and understand, and I'm going to go and look up about the summer cauliflower. Yeah. So that's that, thanks to, again, Nani, Granny's wisdom. If only we have the time to spend with our elders now. I don't want to be this to a book of sermons, but honestly, there is so much we can learn even now from our parents and from our grandparents. The storytelling I miss. Okay, just on the side story, talking of grannies, I was at a superstore shopping, doing my food shopping, and there was an English lady. I say English lady because she had a fascinating story. Two tins closed, and she said, it's Hobson's Choice. And I smiled, yes, yes, it's Hobson's Choice. I didn't know what it meant. And then she said, do you know what that means and where it comes from? Does anyone here know what that means?
You've got a choice between a woman that he knows and someone else, but...
No, there is no choice. Hobson's Choice is where there is no choice. And the store... The story is thanks to this lady I met yesterday. She told me that there used to be an innkeeper or look after stables somewhere in Cambridge. And this was like a 3-minute conversation, so not a lot of details. And when people came to stay at that inn, they would leave the horses in the stables, right? Mr. Hobson looked after the horses. And then next day or the day after when you left, he would give you the horse that he wanted you to take. So it was Hobson's choice what horse you got back. You didn't have a choice. Hence, it's Hobson's choice. You learn every day. And it was so interesting, and I remember that. So coming back to grandmother, curiosity, languages, food, cultures, it's all about learning all the time. And Flavors Without Borders, my book, is a result of the curiosity that made me curious about cultures and food. Okay, coming back to what we learn, the wisdom. Eating together. I was talking about single parents, small families. It doesn't matter small or big. I think one thing my mother always said and my grandmother said, we should eat one meal together. Because families who eat together, live together. Now, this is not just in Indian culture. I think this is a cross-cultural a tradition and something that was that came without any effort. So from being a very wee culture, which was so natural, normal, and we didn't have a choice, we are becoming a very me culture. When I came to this country 30 years back, I stayed with my aunt, my cousins, and everyone at dinner. I'm having a dinner in my room. My favorite TV program is coming. One cousin went, oh, I think I don't feel like eating today. One gone. The third one said, I'm going to eat a bit later. I'm not hungry. So I was left at the table alone. And I said, I was like fascinated. Same grandmother, you know, you change. But I think it's really important to be eating together because that's where we learn all about sharing. We hear the stories. That's where the bonds are formed. You know, we have one chapati left. Let's have half each. Where, how else would we learn? And we didn't have a choice about what was cooked. Here, we give our children so much choice that there comes a stage where you are at the same table, but everybody's having different food. So I just want to get your thoughts. Is this the right way to go, or is this the only way to go, or are we doing something not right? I wouldn't say wrong. Anyone?
Well, I live on my own, but my brothers come over. So this morning, me and my brother shared half a fried chapati, you know, for breakfast when we do fry a chapati in Evda. Yeah. So it was lovely sharing it with him, half a chapati.
And what is the feeling that you get?
Oh, it's lovely sharing, yes.
So that's that love?
Yeah.
It's a special bond?
Yeah.
Yeah. When we make food, we often give it to our neighbors. There is so much love that goes with that give and take and affection and the connections that you build. And I think that's what comes down. And I hope we can carry that on. And that's, you know, when we were talking of granny's wisdom, and we'll talk more about it. But there are things that you don't need a consultant to come and talk to you about, because everything these days, there's a coach and a consultant to remind us about the simple things that our grandparents did as a part of their life. Yeah. So there was eating together. There was gratitude. You know, whether you believe in God or you don't believe in God, this is about food and it's about thank you for what we have today. It also meant about the respect and respecting those people who were making the food. And I used to always tell my nani, Nani, thank you. You're such a good cooker. Because she used to make such good food. And I was just so happy that she made a different dish for us every day. So that appreciation, that gratitude, that love, I learned it from my mother and my mother learned it from her mother. And I think that respect is slowly, we take everything so much for granted and there's so much choice. And it really makes me sad to see it go. So do you agree with me or not? Because I just want it to be a more like an interactive conversation. Do share your thoughts. Does anyone want to say anything about what are we keeping and what are we losing and why?
Hi, I'm lucky enough to still have one of my grandmas with me. Yeah. And I think for us, the sort of family eating together has evolved a little bit. So I live up here and all my family live down in London. So what we do now is when we have all of our family gatherings, it's always centered around a meal. And you have all of those lovely conversations. And so everyone really makes an effort to come. And then we do some cooking together. We eat together. We do the washing up together. And it becomes this really, really lovely kind of experience for everyone in the family. Also with my grandmother, she grows a lot of her own fruit and vegetables and she still does making jam. So I've been able to go down and make raspberry jam with her and we've done the marmalade for the year.
I hope you're writing down all the recipes.
Oh, yes, I am. Don't worry.
Yeah, because those are real treasures.
Yeah. And
but just tell me, how does it make you feel when you're doing all the things that you're doing?
It makes me feel really happy because it's in those sort of moments of interaction that aren't sort of a, you know, how are you doing? What's going on? It's the deeper conversations that you have while you're doing the other things that are really important. And so for me, growing up, I'm mid-30s now, but we were always brought up that we would eat together as a family at the table in the evening. And my sister has kids and they're sort of like around 10 to 13 years old, and they're probably the only family that they know in her area that they still have those sit down meals at the table every evening.
Yeah. And I think there is a point that you made. Lives are changing. We have busy lives. You're families in London, you are here. So yeah, it's you, but you do it when you can and you make an effort to do it. I think that's what it is. We are losing the, we are becoming so self-centered so that we are putting our convenience rather than looking at what do we gain. And you know what you've said about the happiness that you get when you share, you eat, whether it's half a chapati or half a croissant, whatever it, it's the love that you're sharing. And you know, the TV, then comes the phone, then comes the video games. Where do you draw the line? And I, you know, now I've seen, and I can imagine mums getting very stressed. So they'll give the kid the phone when the baby is like 3 months old. So the child doesn't even know what they're eating. How do you connect with the food without touching, tasting without it? If you're eating like a machine, we never did it. I'm so glad that we grew up where television came into my life when I was 18 years old. And I'm not saying that should be with the next generation because things change. Have the TV, have everything, but it's about here and now. It's about making the connection. So when I see mom's phone, eat, finish this now. Come on. It's a mechanical thing. I think the love has to come back. The joy of eating has to come back in what we eat, how we eat. And that's, again, I go back to Nani's wisdom, what our granny said.
Radhika, I'm really curious to know, what are the medicinal foods that you saw your grandma use in the kitchen that you still have in your cupboard? So what's your kitchen medicinal cupboard like?
So I think there are quite a few little things. So the first one is like when we had a bad throat, or I remember singing competition and my throat went and my nani immediately said, give her warm milk with turmeric. Right? I said, no, I'm not going to drink this. Anyway, as a kid, you don't expect a kid to say, oh, lovely, let's have this mix. Right? But I drank it. And as you grow older, you realize the turmeric in Hindi, in Urdu maybe, it's haldi. Haldi dood is like so valuable and beneficial. And turmeric is anti-Alzheimer's now, anti-inflammatory. And now the trend, I've got a list somewhere here of, what is it? Turmeric milk, the golden milk, or the turmeric latte, selling in shops for £7 and £8. Yeah. So, you know, how old wisdom become new trends, and we happily pay £7-£8 for a turmeric latte, yeah, or a golden milk. And I think we were having a conversation. Who was it? Gary Barlow. Do you want to share that story, Irna, about Gary Barlow? Just
the first time I started hearing about turmeric milk outside of my culture was when Gary Barlow tweeted about it. And then after that, I started seeing it in all the magazines.
Yeah. So this turmeric milk. And again, the other thing is we have like fruit, amla, gooseberry and ginger. Ginger is really good for, you know, for your digestion. It's for when you have colds, we have ginger and tulsi tea, and it's anti-inflammatory properties. But again, you don't take it seriously till you have to pay for it. Till you get the ginger boosting shots that you're again paying £5 a shot. Amla juice has become an immune booster and you're paying £10 a shot and you're happily going and paying it. But if your mom and grandmother will give you a teaspoon and out, you're going to say, no. So, you know, the herbal remedies, we had ghee, clarified butter, but it has to be homemade and good clarified butter. Served, not cooking in ghee, but you just pour it over your rice or dal or put it in a chapati, because in Ayurveda, we believe it's very good for gut health. It's very good. It lubricates your system. It's very good for digestion. And it's also fortified with vitamin A, D, E, and K. That's my nutrition speaking here. Now, you don't cook and bathe in ghee. You don't do that. But you have a little bit of ghee, but then suddenly we became anti-ghee, which is fine. But now you've got, people are minting money by the different types of ghee, including a turmeric ghee that's in the market. You know, so it's ghee I still use a little bit. My mother has just come from India, so I'm going to ask her to make some ghee it's a, but you really get some good, very good ghee, not the hydrogenated fat. So there is ghee, there is ginger. Okay, then we used to eat a lot of millets as kids. My mother would have, again in the winter, my grandmother, because it's very cold, I grew up in North India, have millets, jowar, ragi. These are called mota anaj. Thick, they're quite high fiber foods that you eat in winter. Like, very, and now, my God, there was a convention on millets, worldwide convention on millets. So the trend's coming back. Quinoa. Nobody knew what quinoa was. And poor thing, we really, I mean, I didn't eat quinoa because it was, it suddenly became such an expensive crop for the local people who could, it was their staple and they couldn't eat, but that's a different story. But mota anaj, so all the things, so we had ginger when it was cold. There was turmeric doodh. There was amla shots. And I'm trying to think more, but I want to hear from you all some of the kind of your nannies or grannies tricks or tips or remedies that you know or practice or that you've learned from your parents or grandparents.
Do all grandmothers have special knowledge about food and so on? Or is it just,
I'm just
in India?
Let's hear it from...
Well, I mean, I had one of my grandmothers was a very good cook and the other one wasn't so good. So everyone has these talents, do they?
No, and maybe not the cooking skills, but it's about the wisdom that they have. They ate well. They shopped locally. I think it's food is just one of the things. It could be the grandfather also. Yes.
Hi, Radhika. Hi. I was going to say amethi is actually quite popular in Indian culture, especially for mothers who have just given birth.
Fenugreek.
Yes.
Fenugreek. Leaves or seeds?
I think it's the seeds.
Seeds, but also, okay.
Yeah, so they make like a drink for mothers to drink after they give birth. And that's one of the healing properties.
Fenugreek tea. It's now available in markets, isn't it?
Yes. But do you know what? Coming on to that, it was quite interesting what you said about stuff being trendy now. But I think that's a lot to do with social media and about how wellness influencers who are non-South Asian are now finding these and promoting them. But because they're promoting it, it's now considered trendy or very cool or interesting. The same way with yoga. Yoga was practiced thousands of years ago.
Yes.
But because it's now westernized and now become more popular and trendy. So the same way, I think, for a lot of these things, ginger shots, turmeric face masks,
yes,
all of this stuff, which we've practiced and now parents have told us, but we were like, no, we don't want to know, can't bother with that. But because it's now on social media and there's, you know, someone who's non-South Asian promoting it, I think now it's becoming
more
popular.
You value it more?
Absolutely.
That's interesting.
Yeah.
That's really interesting.
There's lots of Asian, South Asian influencers who share a lot of this on social media saying they were practicing this ages ago, but nobody took any interest because they were not white.
Well,
or they were not.
It's coming back.
Exactly.
It's coming back.
It's coming back. So it becomes a trend. But
it's become a trend. There was a lady there in the... Yeah.
Hi. So the food that we sort of grew up with from my grandma, my mum now uses it, is black seed. So either in oils or the actual seeds. So what my mum tends to do, she'll put a little bit of like the black seeds into like the chapati mixture. And for those of you who are aware of black seed, there's lots of healing powers of black
seeds.
Seeds.
Or black seeds?
Black seed.
Black seed.
Yeah.
And which part of is this?
So my family are from Pakistan.
Pakistan.
Yeah.
Okay. I've heard that in Morocco also. It's an Arab thing,
yeah.
Black seeds, and supposed to have healing power. Okay. And do you do that? You do that too? Okay. It's different from Nigella seeds. It's black seeds. I've yet to try. But the reason I know is because somebody was saying is they also take it because it also reduces blood sugar. Like so does methi. It's not a solution, but it just helps. I think that I just want to say. Okay. Anyone else who wants to share any tips or anything, home remedies or anything that works, which is herbal or ajwain? That's a good one.
Yeah.
Ajwain is not asafoetida. No, that's hing.
Yeah, ajwain. So
it's a kind of carom seeds. Thank you.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Yeah. Yeah, they're supposed to be really good for your system, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. For digestion.
For digestion,
honey,
yeah.
Honey. Again. Yeah. Honey, good honey, I think is also very good. So honey, ginger and tulsi or basil leaves is a really powerful combination that we grew up with. So if you have a cold and a bit of brandy sometimes if you want. That's optional, but something very warming. There's a lady at the back here.
Green tea and cardamom with lemongrass as well sometimes.
With lemongrass.
And mint as well sometimes.
So this is again good for the digestion and the system. Yeah, yeah. So there are lots of different ways and different herbs and different foods that we can use. I think it's really good to see that we are doing it now in some form and shape. But that was part of their remedy cupboard. So we didn't have, I opened my shelf and I had so many tablets and paracetamol. And my mother said, first thing, declutter. Yeah. I think you need both. I'm not dismissing one to the other. Depends on what it is. But I think the power of spices and herbal things is very strong and something that they believed in. Do feel, there is some time for Q&A at the end, but I'm just going to talk a bit more about mindful eating, my favorite subject. Because a couple of years back, there was a conference on mindful eating and you had to pay £120 ticket to be part of it. And I think that made me curious. What is mindful eating that I have to pay £120? Anyway, I didn't go for the mindful eating thing, but I started reading up on mindful eating. Okay. And then again, I took a screenshot. It's about eating slowly. It's about connecting with your food. It's about knowing where your food source is. And please correct me and add to it. It's about paying attention. Eat when you're hungry. It's about the way you eat, right? And it's about environment also, and appreciation and gratitude. And I said, ooh, so let me start giving talks on mindful eating, because that's what my grandmothers, our grandparents did. And that's what they did, which has got lost somewhere in the way. And of course, mindful eating, we know, connecting with the food, knowing what you chew and taste, where you're sourcing locally. So all the things that I've been talking about is ticking the box towards mindful eating. And part of that for me, and that comes again with the culture I come from, is eating with the fingers and hands. And yes, for cultures that are not used to it, that can appear, it's different. But the foods we eat are different, please.
Yes. Well, obviously, we were taught how to use cutlery, but we didn't stand on ceremony. And if we were out, as I say, because we grew everything that we ate, you would go out and you could pull a carrot out of the ground and, you know, just wash the soil off it and eat it. It was, you don't need forks. Yeah.
So you don't need. So again, different cultures, different practices, different beliefs, but talking of the South Asian culture. Eating rice and roti, that's the way we've been brought up without thinking about the science. That's the way it is. Also, hygiene, you wash your hands and eat. There's all things about where your cutlery is washed, etc. But I think more importantly, after the mindful eating course, and I went and did my own research, talked to my mom, etc. You know, this is where you start thinking your own beliefs and culture more seriously when you suddenly have to pay £120 for something. It's the principles of Ayurveda. If you've heard about Ayurveda, it's a very ancient Indian health system or healing food system about wellness. So in Ayurveda, eating with fingers is part of a mindful eating because it connects with the food. But there is a scientific explanation to it, because every time you touch the food, it stimulates the nerve endings and gives a signal. So it starts the digestion process. More importantly, it's enjoying, and that's you're making the connection. And I won't be surprised if there are classes, and maybe I will start about, let's connect with the food, feeling, touching, and tasting. You do it with the thing, but there was a reason why, and a scientific reason for eating with the foods. So mindful eating practices also that, about making that connection with the food. It triggers the digestive juices, but also it believes that the fingers represent the five natural elements. So the thumb is the fire, air, space, earth, and water. So this is, again, connected to nature, healing, digestion, and well-being. And again, coming from a very mixed culture, so my husband, half German, half Spanish, He tried. And again, you don't force. You don't pull something down. You just have to respect. So he tried. He couldn't even have. He has a paratha with the knife and fork. I just found it hilarious. But he couldn't. And that's fine. But, you know, you need to be comfortable and confident to be doing what you do and be not be embarrassed about it. And there was an article in the paper which everyone's talking about, and we discussed it at a panel discussion about the mayor's candidate in New York. Can't remember his name. He was photographed having biryani with his fingers. Mayoral candidate, New York, eating biryani with the fingers, and the press has just attacked him. So I think coming back, each culture, own way, there is a balance, there is a rationale, there is a reasoning to it. And it all comes back about embracing cultures, about understanding and enjoying it. I tried eating with chopsticks, I tell you, and I still can't. And it's not that I didn't want to. I mean, there's a long story, funny story, but I don't have time to share with you now about why I was forced to eat with chopsticks. Okay, I'll tell you very quickly. My husband said, oh, we've got these friends, they're from Japan and they are going to invite us. And he knew I can't eat with chopsticks, and I'm very comfortable with, okay, cutlery, I'm happy with fork and knife and all. I think he said, but they don't have cutlery in the house. So Radhika, you have to learn how to use chopsticks. So I went on this big lecture. When people come to my house from other cultures, I don't expect them to eat with fingers. So why are they expecting to eat me to eat with chopsticks when I'm going to their house? So I went on that first. So he said, I don't know. Simple as answer. I said, that's not right. I don't want to go and all that. Then I took it as a challenge. So he said, we have 10 days. But I bought some chopsticks and I would make rice every day. Falling over. I wasn't, the stress of it, I gave it up. And then I told them, I said, okay, Thomas, I won't eat. I'm going to have my meal, or I'm going to take my own pair of cutlery. I don't think that'll be rude if I take out my own pair of cutlery from my handbag. Anyway, I prepared, and he said, no, no, it's okay. They might have some finger foods. I got there and I was like so terrified and tense before the meal. And I told them, and I was meeting them, hi, how are you? The food came. I said, actually, I can't eat with chopsticks. She said, that's fine. We have cutlery. After all that. So I think, but the whole, the exercise, the experience, and my immediately reaction, I'm like this, my culture, why can't you embrace it? But these are the stories. So I think I'm going to kind of wrap up, but I also want to reopen it up to question, answer, sharing your thoughts, that we are who we are because of the, you know, the legacy, what we've learned from our grandparents, parents, from each other. That's why I said I want to always learn and share and grow. It's really important to be curious, to adapt, learn, and evolve. Because again, like in the book I taught, the foods and flavors that we enjoy today is a result of all the cultural interactions that have taken place over the hundreds of years. You know, we wouldn't have potatoes in this country if the Spanish hadn't brought it from South America. Indian cuisine wouldn't have had chilies and tomatoes if the Portuguese hadn't, and the list is endless. So it's about embracing it and enjoying it, but not forgetting our roots, and also appreciating the, you know, our wisdom, the our nani and my nani. So I'm going to now stop here and open the floor to any questions, thoughts, any comments about what we've been talking about today?
Can I just go back to the cutlery bit? Even here, the fork and knives, what we use, a lot of people cannot hold the fork in the left hand and the knife in the right hand. Because I know my husband, he uses the right hand for the fork.
Yeah.
So it is difficult for other cultures to even adapt with the cutlery, you know, when you're used to eating with your hands and things.
Yeah. And there was a lady in the panel discussion earlier, and she was talking about going to school, primary school here, maybe 40 years of year back, and everybody having a cutlery, and her parents couldn't eat with knife and fork.
No.
And she had to eat it, and she was terrified. And so she wasn't eating food or trying to eat different foods, so the pressure.
The pressure of it, yes, yes. The etiquette of holding the knives and the forks in the right way.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think, yeah, there is about learning culture, but I think also we are too embarrassed or afraid of admitting it. How many times would you eat with your fingers in a restaurant? We don't, because we are so worried about what is A, B or C going to say.
Yes, that's right.
Yeah, yeah. Thank you.
Hello. My question is about how we can adapt some of these practices and this knowledge from our grandmother's generation into our current lives. Because I find that I'm increasingly relying on things like fast food or, you know, ready meals and that kind of thing, because I'm working full time and then I don't have as much time at home to be able to do all of, you know, like make things properly from scratch. So is there like a happy medium we can find between the two worlds?
So I think, yeah, life is fast paced and we are juggling a lot. But I think cooking from scratch is something that is the solution. It doesn't have to be elaborate meals. You know, cooking simple foods can be very easy. And what I call fuss-free cooking, and I'm not talking of Indian food now. I'm talking of good food. I'm talking of healthy food. And I'm talking of gadget-free foods. You can use an air fryer and all, but I think cooking from scratch, I think there needs to be a trend or a social media push. Simple foods, and cooking from scratch is the kind of slogan, which, you know, one pot meals you can make. You can batch cook. So you make something and eat it over 2 days or 3 days or even freeze it. That's much better than buying processed foods. Yeah. Does that help? Yeah. Okay.
Just going back to what you're saying about mindful eating, about what that woman back there said about turmeric, etc. What you need to do is start classes on cooking from scratch and charge an exorbitant amount of money, because that seems to be it. You know, people jump on the bandwagon if it suddenly is a lot of money.
Yeah. So when you've seen Radhika's cooking from scratch classes, you might ask for a commission then.
Well, but I think you're right. It's like mindfulness now is the new in thing, isn't it? It's a mindful meeting. They're charging 120 quid and you just think, you're just sitting and enjoying it with your family. It's not brain rocket power, is it?
Yeah. But you know, your point and the point that the lady said is we suddenly appreciate or suddenly value or open our eyes to think when either there is a monetary value or the messenger is someone else. You know, Gary Barlow said it, let's pay £8 and try that. Yeah. So
can you tell us about some of the recipes in your book? Maybe some of the favorite recipes that are in the book?
Okay, favorite is going to be tricky, but I can share some interesting recipes. So I've got, of course, my mother's kidney bean curry, rajma curry, which we know. But what I discovered when I was researching is the story of kidney beans traveling from India to South Africa in Durban, where it becomes bunny chow. And there's a very interesting story of how when the indentured laborers went to South Africa, they took their spices, flavors, but then how bread, because of apartheid, and there's stories I hear, but they were given food scooped up in hollowed bread. That's the bunny chow. But how then the kidney beans becomes bunny chow. But there is a Kenyan stew with coconut milk, kidney beans, and some mild spices. I was like blown by this recipe because I'm so conditioned to eating kidney beans in the rajma chawal that when I added coconut milk and I tried the recipe, it was so, you know, it just opened my mind up to say, oh my God, all my life I've just had kidney beans just this way. So the kidney, the magrabe, it's a coconut kidney bean stew, is lovely. Then I love all the Brazilian recipe. So it's the story of fish and how the Portuguese influence. And I just love very simple recipes, moqueca, the fish stew. I'm going to go through all my recipes like this, one by one. But do you know the trick? I'm pretending to like flick through the pages. Very simple and very popular in all my cooking classes is a beetroot raita. And I have, so it's beetroot, but then what I've done when I've made the yogurt, I've put fresh ginger in it. Gut health. we do that, ginger. So it's part of that. And then the tempering is with a lot of peanuts and curry leaves, which gives it that added texture. But I do, so I've got that. That's lovely mango recipes again, Shrikhan. But I've got 10 fun radical recipes, which I call radical because I've combined different flavors. So I'm going to just share that with you. Baby jacket spuds with cream chili, cheese and chili thecha. Chili thecha is a Maharashtrian Indian condiment. So this is blending the two fusion cultures. And then, much to my mother-in-law's horror, I took the Spanish tortilla and added spices to it. So that's a masala tortilla. It is delicious. So when I do demos and tasters, everybody, a lot of people have tasted this and bought the book. But my mother-in-law was horrified. But you know, so I love combining flavors. But I've got some very simple lentil recipes. There's a Tunisian chickpea stew called lablabi for the autumn winter months. It is so wholesome and delicious. It's got a bit of harissa in it. So that's lovely. Arna, if you want me to stop, because I'll slowly go through all the 80 recipes.
Do you have any quicker recipes? Because I come from a family where women always worked. And one thing that I learned from my mother and my grandmother was to cook fast. And yeah. I think this is what you were talking about, when you're coming home after a long day and you only have about half an hour to, you know, fix dinner and put it on the table. So do you have when I think of curries, I think of things that simmer for very long.
30 minutes.
Okay, there we go. That's what
I'll tell you why, because my mother was a teacher. She worked all her life and she would cook 2 fresh meals every day, lunch and dinner. So the food that I had, except for 1 or 2 Persian recipes, which are more elaborate, because I just wanted to demonstrate how you make that special Persian, it's called polo. The recipes, 80% of them, you can do them in 30 minutes. And just to say, I was teaching cooking yesterday and in cooking school in London. We did 3-4 dishes in 2 hours. That's 30 minutes each. And they're all here. In my book, Flavors Without Borders. Okay, we've got a few minutes left. How was it? Just give me your thoughts on what you've heard now. I think it'll be really good for me to get some feedback. Radhika, it was interesting. Not. Yeah.
Sorry, I have another question.
Okay.
What's your convenience food that you turn to? Or are you telling us that your kitchen is full of only fresh things?
So my convenience foods, I use a pressure cooker and I'll make a quick dal, or I'll make a quick chickpea stew. Because, you know, I don't cook Indian food every day. It's because that's my life over here. I love different flavors. So I will just do a garbanzo con spinach. So I'll take, so I put chickpeas. It's a Spanish recipe with spinach, etc. And it's ready. Okay, I don't soak the chickpeas. So I might use canned chickpeas. That's the shortcut. But 20 minutes is not a lot of time in 24 hours to have a wholesome meal cooked from scratch. My mother's vegetable pulao is here. And that was when she had study duty and she would come home at 7:30. But she would still want us to make a thing. She would make mummy's vegetable pulao. All vegetables. You can put your chickpeas in it. It's a wholesome one pot meal ready in 20 minutes.
Yeah, I'll definitely get that. Hopefully a signed copy.
Yeah, I'm going to be there.
Yeah.
But do share your thoughts, because we were talking about, you know, sometimes you're sitting here and talking and you're thinking, does it making sense, or are people just being polite?
Yeah.
But it'll be good to hear what, you know, we finish off by, if anybody wants to share anything.
So is the mother-in-law going to ask for commission?
In kind. In kind. I think, is there anyone else? No, in that case, I just want to say thank you very, very much for patiently listening, participating. And yeah, thank you so much. And I'll be next up.
Thank you.
Thank you for joining us for this episode of the Explore Words, Discover Worlds podcast with Bradford Literature Festival. If you enjoyed this episode and you'd like to help support the podcast, please subscribe, share this episode with others, and leave a rating. Mark your calendars for the return of Bradford Literature Festival, Friday the 3rd to Sunday the 12th of July, 2026.